Hey everybody, welcome to this week's Q&R. I'm Megan, and today I'm here with Pastor Adam, and we have a female on the panel with me. Pastor Laura's here today.
Sorry, not me.
And then our jokester, Pastor Wayne, down there on the end. We are so glad that you have joined us today for this week's session of Q&R. And as you can tell, there's nothing up here but our little pieces of paper, and so we can't see what you're saying, but Pastor Lou is with us as well. He's in the comments, so if you're watching, make sure that you jump on in there and let him know that you're here, and he can answer any questions you may have, or you can also email them to us at questions@broadwayunited.org, and we will bring those, we will talk about them next week when we're back here on Wednesday. If you want to ask it in the comments, feel free, but also know that you have that option as well. And so I think Pastor Adam's going to share with us a little bit about what exactly this is.
Yeah, we see, kind of keep reminding ourselves mm-hmm. that this is a conversation, and kind of joke, like sometimes the sermon creates more questions than answers, and then you can't answer everything in that moment for every person. So we really needed to provide a space for that. It allows us to have lots of different voices into that conversation, and to do that in a way that's really not about being right or wrong. We have convictions, so it's like it's not like we don't care about the truth, but we also have an openness to listen, and I think there's a need for that kind of space in the church to provide that as an open door for people to ask questions and have some response to that. That's a part of our faith journey and might help them. So hopefully that's what we do. That's a response to questions that people ask, or just wrestlings that we kind of all feel, and it's been a blast so far. So,
yes, we are love checking in with you all each and every week. All right, so today our very first question is probably my favorite because I tend to do it sometimes myself. Why is there so much complaining in the desert? One day they're complaining that they don't have food. One day they don't have water. Miriam and Aaron, Korah, Moses, everybody is complaining. And so why is there so much complaining? And then how is that complaining different from the crying out in Egypt?
Right, so this is in the story after they've come out of slavery, and even after, you know, along the way through the desert, there's just a lot of complaining. So the question, you know, being like, is that the same thing as crying out in the desert, or just in general, why is there so much complaining? In that part of the story, I think it kind of helps us understand a little bit what's going on, because maybe things haven't turned out like they thought they would.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't have a lot of experience with complaining, I think it has to do with expectations. Most of our complaints are when things don't turn out the way we expected them to or wanted them to. And, you know, kind of the deal was God would rescue them out of Egypt and take them to a land of milk and honey. And they're in the wilderness, and they're eating manna every day, and there's no water, and they don't know where they're going to sleep, and there's all these questions. And so I think that's kind of part of the reason they were complaining. And part of it was they didn't really know who they were yet, I think. They're still trying to figure all that stuff out. So, Laura has more experience with complaining.
Much more. Yeah, I mean, from my vast experience, I would say that when I complain, often it's a coping mechanism. It comes at a time when I feel like things are in chaos or out of control. And so, like you said, here they are in this new reality. You know, they've been slaves in Egypt for generations, and so it wasn't a great setting, a great situation, but at least they knew what to expect, right? And so now they're in this unknown, and so in that time of feeling so out of control and like everything is in chaos, then I think one of the ways that we can grasp for that control is to complain about it and try to blame somebody,
right,
or
find
somebody
to blame
for it.
Yeah, it's a pretty universal human response. It's part of our negativity bias in our brains that if one positive thing happens, or a bunch of positive things happen and one negative thing happens, that's the thing we're going to focus on. And there are definitely things for them to focus on in the desert. It's pretty human response. I think, you know, the way the question's framed, the difference between that and crying out to God maybe that, you know, the emotion is essentially the same thing, but just how it's directed. I think somebody said that the crying out to God was expressing that real emotion to God, and complaining is often expressing it to somebody else.
Right.
Or even when we complain to God, you know, whether we have come to God with a sense of a trust or not, I think is a piece of it. And if we begin our own faith journey with the expectation that this is some kind of contract with God, like, okay, I'm going to trust you, and then I'll expect things, your term, expectations, I'm going to expect things to happen, I think we are setting ourselves up for unmet expectations.
Right. Yeah.
And I think if you can kind of go to Jesus, he says, take up your cross and follow me, right?
Yeah.
Or there are parts of the New Testament, that kind of other parts that speak to that.
Yeah.
Right, like the Apostle Paul, when he's writing to the people at Philippi, you know, he's talking to them about the fact he's in chains in that moment,
right,
and that they're likely going to suffer and have some conflict with the world around them. And he talks about them having like the mind of Christ and trying to follow his example with humility. And then it's interesting because like one of the key things he says to them is like, do everything without grumbling and complaining. And he says, if you do that, you're going to shine like stars in the universe. You're going to look so different in this world.
Yeah.
But he doesn't downplay the fact that there's going to be suffering. Mm-hmm. Following Christ isn't going to lead to everything being easy and good.
I think there's that sense that, like Adam was saying there, that as Christians, we do have these expectations of what that's going to be like. And it's not like that for the most part. And so we either feel like you were saying, somebody should be blamed for this. Either God's messing up or I'm messing up. And so I feel bad about myself or I feel bad about God. When the reality is, this is just how it is. This is what it means. This is what it looks like to follow Jesus. It has some hardships, some things I didn't expect. It takes longer. There's a little bit of wandering around involved in it. And so that should not be a source of complaint as much as a source of this relationship and this trust that that God is faithful. And this just happens to be what it looks like, not what I expected, but this is just it.
Yeah, and it's a great example of the time when the Bible leaves something negative in there, right? You would think that if we consider ourselves God's people, then as we tell the story, we might leave out the part that we were, complaining in the desert, and they didn't do that.
Right.
So, I mean, I think there are places in the Bible where it's almost shocking to us that God allows that, that kind of interaction or even complaining. There are places, of course, in this Exodus account where it doesn't seem like that makes. I mean, it's clear that God wants something more out of them and for them. But there are plenty of Psalms, there are plenty of places in the Bible where honesty is okay.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think it's not a matter of whether we're being honest. If I feel I'm having a bad day, I think God knows that already.
Right.
I might as well start there from an honest place. I think for myself, I'm hoping that doesn't sound like complaining. Sometimes it is. But I hope prayer is something other than just complaining to God.
Yeah.
I think it's more
being
honest to God, with God, in the hope that God is at work somehow and can be.
Yeah.
And that's the difference.
Yeah, life's hard, and it's okay to admit that. But that maybe that difference is the complaining is somehow feeling that it's uncalled for or undeserved or I'm being picked on, whereas this calling out to God is just saying, you know life's tough, and I'm just saying it's tough right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not asking you to do anything or fix anything other than be present with me in my misery or my bondage or oppression or sadness, whatever it is.
Yeah, there's almost a giving up of your expectation.
Yeah.
Right? You would hope maybe God would do something, but I'm not going to be in charge of that. I'm going to give that up and just deepen trust, which is really hard to do when you're going through something that's worth complaining about. I mean, we think of complaining as maybe only in response to pretty simple stuff or pretty trite little stuff, but it's not always the case.
Right.
Sometimes, we probably feel like it's legit.
Yeah.
It's legitimate to complain.
Yeah. I'm sure Paul had some really legitimate stuff to complain about.
Yeah,
right.
For sure.
And he called us to shine like the stars.
Right.
Like, this is one thing that sets us apart.
Right.
Makes us different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
somehow God's presence, without changing circumstances, his presence has some power to make things different.
And going to God with that versus everybody else, I mean, man, that's easy to say and hard to live by, but I think it is pretty powerful to go directly to the source. And not to everybody else, looking for people to get onto my side.
Right. And complaining is kind of contagious.
It is contagious, yeah.
It spreads.
People are complaining about how long we've talked about this.
Well, you know what's really funny is that we talk about, so we look over these questions beforehand, and sometimes we'll spend a little bit of time eating lunch and sort of chatting about it before we get on here. But I'm just sort of like overtaken by this conversation because it's sort of similar, but it's so different. But it was really, really good. So like the whole time I'm like, oh, this is really good stuff. Because we all struggle with complaining.
She didn't expect that from us.
That's
there you go. You all just, yes, pleasantly surprised me. I really enjoyed it, and I hope you all did too. All right, the next question. In a lot of the reading we have had, there's God's anger and killing of the Israelites. There's fire and snakes and earthquakes. Like, how do we make sense of that?
Yeah, how do we make sense of that, Laura?
I'm asking y'all.
I'm sorry.
Wow.
No.
I think, as I think about that question, I might not have a very clear way to make sense of it. I know how I was taught to make sense of it as someone who grew up in the church. I was kind of taught to just except that, you know, like God is holy, and so like there are holy reasons for why this is happening, and so his ways are higher than our ways, and his thoughts are higher than our thoughts, and so just close that book and don't worry about that anymore. You know, as I have gone on in life, and especially as we were talking earlier, you brought up like the more that I've come to know Jesus and just seeing God's character throughout all of Scripture, old and new, it's hard for me to just be able to close the book on that and to not wrestle with, well, why did that happen? And I think it's okay to wrestle with that and to ask those questions. I think God can handle it. I don't think that his love for me is dependent upon me being certain about all the answers, but that he's invited me into this relationship with him. I love what Richard Rohr says about mystery. To me, this is one of those mysteries, and maybe one day I'll ask God these questions. I won't care probably then. But, you know, mystery doesn't mean that we can't know anything. It just means that we can kind of endlessly be learning and knowing things, and that we don't get it, but mystery gets us. And so I feel like in wrestling with questions like this, we just come to know God more deeply, even if we don't have a really clear answer to settle it.
And I think this is something we said before we got on live, that the fact that I have a problem with violence in the Bible is primarily because of Jesus.
Right.
So the struggle is within the Bible itself, and specifically through the Son of God, who came and suffered at the hands of a violent world to show the extent of God's love to us.
Yeah.
That's the defining story of the Bible. And so I think Jesus forces us to wrestle with our own acquiescence or being okay with violence in the world.
Yeah.
So I'm with Laura. I've come to a point in my life where I'm pretty secure in saying that I'm not okay with violence at all. And that's going to cause me to wrestle. I still believe in God. I still believe in the power of the Old Testament and as Holy Scripture. But this is a place that I'm going to leave it open and wrestle rather than close it up and try to excuse something that then opens the door for people to make an excuse for something that shouldn't be excused.
Right.
Or to use that as a reference to why it's okay to be violent in our own actions, which I don't think is okay. Right. Ever. And I think, again, Jesus is the ultimate example of that.
Yeah, and I think that I'm weighing, so this is my opinion. I think, you know, the only thing they knew was violence. They'd been slaves, and so probably their interpretation of things that happened was, you know, how would our slave masters, our taskmasters in Egypt, have responded to this situation? Well, they would have been angry. That would have been what motivated them to strike out at us. And so they may have interpreted those events through the lens of slaves. And perhaps what part of salvation is, and coming to know Jesus, is changing that lens of how we see who God is and how he acts. That, you know, Jesus tells us that this is not a God who acts in the way of that people do, that violence is not his method. And he's, you know, adamantly against that, and he's, you know, the victim of violence. And so we see through that lens of Jesus, and that causes us problems to look through the lens that they were seeing what was happening through, I think. And I think that's as it should be. And like Laura says, it's something that we live with and we struggle with, and that's okay. It's just part of the mystery, maybe.
And this is not the first time this question's come up. It's come up through the history of the church from the earliest days of the church. And when we say, we sort of are going to leave it open, it is in response to, there have been a lot of answers that sort of make this make sense. And we could talk through those, that somehow the God of the Old Testament was different than the God of the New Testament. Right. And the early church rejected that argument. There's a way of thinking in which all the scripture all fits together and it all is logical and makes sense. And I'm kind of pushing against right. that as well.
Yeah.
I think that logical or certainty-based approach to the tough parts of the Bible often don't get us into a good place, right. honestly. Yeah. So mystery is a great word. Right. You know, I'm gonna be in relationship with God and wrestle at the same right. time. I think is a pretty biblical way of living, actually.
Yeah. Right.
So, and then if we keep pointing back to Jesus, I think it's okay to read the Bible through yeah. the lens of Jesus.
Right.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Pastor Adam. Mentioned logical, and so the next question we have is that from Numbers 22, we have this donkey talking to Balaam.
Right.
So, like, what's the deal with that?
Well, the famous preacher joke is that if God could talk through a donkey, he could talk through me. So we kept that, you know, Facebook yeah. Live worthy there, but yeah. I think that's all I've got to say about it, actually.
I find this story very interesting. I mean, it's not the story you're expecting to read as you're going along, right? Especially in Numbers, after you've seen a lot of Numbers. Like, oh, yeah. a talking donkey.
Nice break.
Yeah, it is. But it is interesting because, I mean, you have Balaam, who's not an Israelite, and yet he's in communication with God and seems to be in relationship with God, where he recognizes his voice. And kind of a little bit of the context of why the donkey talked to him is that, you know, here is Israel on the move toward the promised land, right? And they're taking care of all their enemies. And there's one powerful leader who doesn't want, you know, his people to be taken care of by the Israelites. Right. He wants Balaam to come and curse them, to stop them. Mm-hmm. And Balaam ultimately, you know, through his conversation with God, isn't able to honor what this leader is trying to get him to do. But in the middle of all of that, you do have this donkey. Yeah. So, Wayne, do you know how to explain, like, well, why in the world put it in there?
Well, I was hoping that in this moment God would speak to me. But so far he hasn't. I think it's almost a playful story. It's like, I mean, I know the angel's standing there fixing to kill Balaam doesn't sound too playful, but this idea that God would speak through an animal to get his message across, and the fact that Balaam wasn't that surprised that the angel talked, it's all kind of strange. And so my takeaway is that God's kind of weird sometimes.
Yeah.
So
there's a strangeness, right?
Yeah.
And I think most of us have some, if we have a relationship with God, have some part of our life, some instance in our life that we just kind of can't explain.
Right.
We feel like God spoke, and that's that. I mean,
yeah.
it is, I mean, I think a lot of people have that. And sometimes people will ask, does God still speak through a donkey? But in more general terms, does God still speak today
right.
like that's God did in the Old Testament?
Yeah.
And this is sort of an extreme. It's a weird story. It's one of the oldest stories in the Bible. One of the weirdest stories in the Bible. And yet it is in line with God, a God who engages people for his purposes and speaks, and sometimes in strange ways. I have stories in my life that are like that. Before I came to Broadway, I felt like God, I was wrestling with God and wondering what my next steps were, and I kind of felt like God's kind of said some things. You know, the next day I was going to hear about an opportunity to come to Bowling Green. That's how I got here. You know, yeah. It's a very weird story. I don't tell people like I just now did because I don't talk about that every day. Yeah. But I, through prayer, I felt like God spoke to me, and it set me up to be ready to do what was next.
Yeah.
So, you have a strange story?
I do. I'm not going to reveal it. But, no, I find it interesting sometimes, even like when we preach, like the ultimate preacher joke, right, that God can talk through the donkey. You know, there's times where we will deliver the message we feel like God has given us to deliver to people, and then they'll come up to you afterward, and they're like, this is what God said to me. And you're like, that's awesome. They walk away and you're like, I have no idea how they could have gotten that from what I just said. Right. But God met them somewhere in the midst of that.
Right.
And so
yeah,
I think God shows up in lots of ways.
It does keep us humble, right?
Yeah. Right.
That it's not dependent on me.
Right.
And
God, God will find a way.
Yeah.
God Grace will find us wherever we had. Just God will find a crack.
Yeah. And it is calling us to something. It is calling us to... You know, there are times where we need to act in a certain way. So maybe not. Let's not make too much of the donkey story. But I mean, I think all those things are true.
Yeah,
and I'm really glad Laura was here for that one.
Yeah. Me too. I'm glad she's here for all of them. All right. The last question that we have here today is it's about the law. You know, it's sort of sprinkled out throughout everywhere. We're getting bits and pieces of it here and there. Why is that? Why is it that, or why do you think that? Then it's not just like you could just turn to this chapter of the Bible and it's going to tell you exactly how it goes. Why is it that, you know, we get a little bit here and a little bit there?
Yeah, so like the context there is that in Exodus 20, we get the Ten Commandments, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you could just do that, but then you start reading more and it's like, then it almost feels like the fine print, you know? Like, so then, like, if your cow gores, your bull gores somebody, then what do? You know, like, it's like legal speak now. It's almost like lawyers got involved, which is not always bad. But, like, so if the ox gore or the bull gores you and, you know, it has a history of that and you didn't stop it, then that's one thing. And if it just happened one time, like, it starts to get very specific. And then it just sort of spreads out, right?
Yeah.
It spreads out from there.
And it's all mixed together with the story of what the children of Israel are doing in the wilderness.
It's in the narrative, right?
Right. Yeah, it's all and broken up in that narrative, too. Rather than having the book of Deuteronomy being all the law in one place in the story in Genesis and Exodus, it's all mixed together.
Yeah, which is pretty great, actually.
Yeah.
It tells us something, I think, about what is going on in the story that
right.
it's sprinkled into the into the narrative or into the story of God's work.
Yeah. I think it's important because it gives it this context of relationship, where God is revealing, you know, this guidance to them as He's connecting with them and guiding them along. If it was just this one book, it would be easy for someone. Or for it to come off feeling very cold and very harsh, you know. But whenever it's set in the story, you're able to see how this guidance is coming from a God who created the world and everything in it and made it good. This God who has sought His people out through Abraham, who's rescued them from Egypt. And so whenever He starts laying this out, it's not just someone trying to like squash any fun that we might want to have. It's someone who is inviting us to enjoy life and life to the full and trying to give us some guidance on how to enjoy that life with Him.
Yeah, there's a sermon coming up. You all, both of you are going to preach actually on the Ten Commandments.
Right.
And we were in worship planning today talking about this, and Wayne, you brought up that really Exodus 19, before the Ten Commandments, you know, 3-6, not that I have the Bible memorized, we just talked about that, but like gives a context for the whole rest of it that's going to kind of follow. So do you remember any of what that says?
Well, he reminds them that he has chosen them and that they are his treasured possession. He's carried them on eagle's wings and brought you to myself, and that they are a holy nation and a royal priesthood. And and that he has them in his heart. These are his people. And out of that relationship, that desire for them, comes the law. So it's not squashing their desires, but it's connection there, out of that kind of context.
And a setting apart. I mean, right in there, it says that there would be set apart among other nations.
Right.
For, and it almost makes a sense that Genesis 12, blessed to be a blessing thing.
Right.
You know, that special relationship does not make them like necessarily better than or set against the other nations, but set apart for everybody else.
Yeah, it's interesting that he says that they will be a royal priesthood. Well, a priesthood doesn't minister to itself. It ministers to everybody else. Mm-hmm. And so that's their role, is to be his mediator, his representative, to the rest of the world, not to be set apart away from the world, but to be into the world and to carry his that relationship to them.
So the whole law, sprinkled about as it is really an answer to that context and that covenant.
Yeah, right.
There's a purpose to it.
Right. Yeah, and I think it says to us that there are consequences to our actions. Mm-hmm. That there is right and wrong.
Right.
Some things are better than others.
Yes.
And so he's kind of giving us some guidance into that, and also reminding us that our choices do have consequences for ourselves and for others,
mm-hmm.
because he's a relational God. He wants us in right relationship with each other as well as with him.
Yeah.
So when you mix it into the story and you see how that plays out, you don't just see, you see the consequences of some of the choices they make and how it brought them to, despair and defeat in places. And then when they were obedient and when they, listened to what God was saying, they found victory and direction and guidance. So it's kind of a mixture of the two, I think.
Yeah, not to get ahead of for you all who are going to preach about the Ten Commandments, but if you think of this as a slave people coming out of Egypt, they really needed some boundaries,
right?
So the Ten Commandments is a starting point, or sort of almost a boundary setting. It's like, and it's why that is a lot of do nots in there, right? Thou shalt not,
right?
Because in this series we've been saying you're called out of and into that, the whole freedom experience with God and the whole way sort of framework for the Exodus is a calling out of and into. So the thou shalt nots is a saying no to these things that are not God's ways or things that are from the world of oppression,
mm-hmm.
Whether that be adultery or coveting or whatever is trying to free them from one life.
Right.
And
that's a good point.
Into another.
Right. Yeah, into. And in, even in the law, it talks about compassion and justice and mercy and caring for the poor and a new ordering of how those people with power relate to those people without power, those people with wealth relate to those without wealth. And so he's calling us into this newness. But ultimately, we find that the life that he desires for us is not just in what we're called out of, but it's what we're called into, that life that we have in Christ.
A good portion of the Ten Commandments set us up out for the out of.
Right.
But then you've got to, back to taking this to Jesus, we kind of go all the way through the story to begin to gain a picture of what that into freedom, the fullness of God's freedom looks like.
And part of that reason, maybe this law being interspersed with the narrative tells us that this is just part of the story.
Yeah.
This is not where God's ending.
Yeah.
This is not the climax. This is not where he's been trying to get them. This is just one step toward what he's taking us where. And so the story doesn't end at the Ten Commandments. It keeps going.
I wonder if the Ten Commandments, you could almost understand them as a line, like, okay, this is helping them and us make a distinction between that old life and then the new one. And of course, that's not the end, but it's the beginning.
It sets us up to discover.
Or at least in the middle of the story.
Yeah.
We're coming out of and going into, and that is a process. It's not like...
Yeah. Right.
But we do need things that help us
kind
of mark that distinction. There are moments along the way, and the Ten Commandments, that's a moment, right?
Yeah.
A pretty powerful moment that we don't want to take lightly, right?
And it's not just a set of laws, but it's that whole experience they have with God on the mountain there that is monumental,
Right.
It's this moment that begins to define who they are. That God would meet them like that.
Pretty powerful.
Well, in 2 Sundays, you can hear all about.
You can hear,
yeah. They got to figure out what they're going to preach on because they just unloaded a lot right there. So
this is a preach to help the sermon.
There you go. All right, guys, that is it for us today. We are so glad that you joined us. If you have questions, please send those in to us. You can email them at questions@broadwayunited.org. You can drop them in the comments on Sunday morning. If you're here, you can write them on your communication sheet and drop those in the offering. But we would love to be able to help you wrestle through those. That's what we're here to do, is just to wrestle through these questions. So we hope that you'll send them in. And then we hope that we see you right here next Wednesday at noon for our next session of Q&R. Have a great week.
Thanks.